And of course, you're listening. This is WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. And what we just got through listening to, we started with Miguel Zayon from his new CD. Currently, I think it's out now. And we followed up with something that's not out yet, and it currently will be out. And from celloist, trombone player, Dana Leon. And that's from his forthcoming CD entitled Dream States. And on the phone with us is Dana. Dana, how are you?
All right. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Oh, it's a great day to be in New York. We're at the tail end of some funky weather, and it's good to be here.
All right. So just let me bring my audience up to speed about you. Dana's hails from actually San Francisco or the Bay Area. Wouldn't say San Francisco. The Bay Area, correct?
That's right.
And trained or studied as a classical celloist, but also a trombone player. Now, that might seem odd to some people, the combination, but there's a similarity there that I'll let you explain that to my audience.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, physically, they're quite different looking. You know, one's purely metal, the other is mostly wood. But, you know, in terms of the physics of it, you know, neither of them have any frets or guidelines. So, you know, to the naked eye, it may look quite mysterious and almost magical, you know. There's a joke I like to say that, you know, people look at the trombone and they say, oh, it looks like, you know, you might just be arbitrarily moving your arm around and the notes change just magically. And then I reply always, that's because it is.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, the cello and the trombone actually traditionally are the only two instruments that read all of the different types of scores, from the lowest bass clef all the way to the highest treble clef. Mm-hmm. So in school, that was coming in handy because I was reading orchestral scores and reading, you know, the sheet music from all different instruments and grabbing influence from all over the place. And yeah, it's interesting that those are the two instruments that really do that.
Okay, so Dana also does. I mean, he's not new to jazz as like someone just came into jazz. Now, I remember hearing him and I believe seeing you with Chicago's own Henry Threadgill back in 2001.
Exactly. Okay.
Recorded Two Lips, the Two Lips CD.
Up Pop the Two Lips.
Up Pops the Two Lips, yeah. Thank you. Right.
Around that time, yeah.
And so you, Dad, you must either just got out of school, finished school, and then how did that collaboration come about?
Actually, you're exactly right. It was pretty much a dream summer for me. Coming out of college, I actually was tapped on the shoulder by Henry Threadgill, as well as Sam Rivers,
in
the same summer to play together with, you know, two giant titans of the saxophone and composition and legends in jazz. With Henry, I actually connected through the fantastic drummer composer Daphnis Prieto, who I had met when Daphnis made his very first trip to the United States. We met while we were both teaching at the Stanford Jazz Workshop at Stanford University in California. That was in the mid-90s. And so when Henry Threadgill was looking for a cellist that was flexible and able to improvise, Daphnis was kind enough to make an introduction. And it was one of those New York moments, you know, where I think he had told Henry a couple times, and Henry said, okay. And then, you know, lo and behold, a couple months later, Daphnis and I were performing at the renowned Jazz Gallery downtown in Tribeca, New York City, when Henry decided to just show up in the audience one night and said, oh, who's this guy that plays cello, you know? And Daphnis said, oh, no, actually, I was playing trombone that night. And Daphnis said, oh, yeah, this is Daniel. Oh, by the way, yeah, this is the guy I've been telling you about that also plays cello. You guys should get together. That was when I really felt like I actually joined a real academy. I was just talking about this yesterday with another young cello player, where I finally felt like I was doing something and learning something that I really wanted to learn and doing something that I really wanted to do with music. Because Henry, you know, is a legendary composer, but just a great, you know, just a great human being, very forthcoming with a lot of the information that he's gained, you know, through hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And it really felt like an academy, you know, I was reading very difficult music, practicing together with great musicians under the tutelage of Henry, you know, getting my first, you know, cutting my teeth, getting my first exposures at some of the most high-profile jazz festivals in the world.
Right, so right.
Really, really was something else. And he opened the door for me to meet a lot of the other, you know, creative musicians, many of them out of Chicago, such as Steve Coleman,
mm-hmm.
Roscoe Mitchell, Muhal, Richard Abrams.
Okay.
One of my favorites, George Lewis.
Right, right. Trombone. Right.
Exactly, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you, I didn't even realize that you played with Sam Rivers. How was that experience?
Oh, it was incredible. You know, one of the funniest things he would say is you know, he would announce to the audience. He said, you know, everybody, I know that you're here because, you know, the newspaper said that this was experimental music, but I've been playing, you know, with some of these musicians for 25 years, so I think it's hardly an experiment anymore.
Exactly, exactly. So Dan also, and this is where a lot of young musicians are doing now, coming up. You go down the both avenues of hip hop and jazz, and I find a lot of musicians doing that. I was talking to pianist Chris Bonner a while ago, and he plays, won the Thelonious Monk competition for piano a couple of years ago. But he was tapped on the shoulders to be in Jay-Z's The Throne recording.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So how do you navigate between those two worlds, or do you just combine both of them?
For me, yeah, it is a definite combination. I mean, hip-hop and jazz, you know, people make the correlations, you know, till the end of the earth about how they're both, you know, musical collages. Both styles of music grab from other genres. Hip-hop more literally, where you might be cutting up samples of other works, and jazz, where you might be quoting and influenced by, you know, other genres from mm-hmm. around the world. For me, yeah, it's an organic mix. You know, I grew up listening to what I believe is one of the most, you know, popular heydays of hip-hop in the 90s, you know, late 80s through the
mm-hmm.
the end of the millennium. And it wasn't until I moved to New York that I realized I could mix it all together.
Okay.
You know, and that there was no shame in loving what you love.
Right.
You know, because
right.
growing up in, you know, in strict music lessons and strict music academies, you know, there's not a big emphasis on how you can make music your own. You need to learn, you know, the ropes, you need to learn theory, you need to learn the repertoire that is given to you, and that's pretty much where it ends. You know, so being able to come to New York and see that people are bringing in, you know, elements of their own worldly ethnicities, they're bringing in, you know, personal reflections, all of that helped me open up. And also studying at the Manhattan School of Music, where I played strictly orchestral cello and jazz trombone on two different degrees there. I was there on a scholarship.
Mm.
I also was not allowed to really, or given any opportunity to really cross those things. So it was up to me to say, hey, you know what? Actually, I'm learning all this stuff about jazz and pop and you know, and jazz history and whatnot, and new sounds, and I want to do that on the cello.
Okay.
Vice versa. You know, I'm learning all this about beautiful sound and structure and composition and theory and counterpoint and orchestration for a classical instrument on the cello, but I want to do that on the trombone.
Okay.
I'd like to reinforce that foundation. So that's really where it started. Coming to New York is when it really kind of mixed together, and now, you know, it's very organic. I'm owning a pretty popular recording studio here in Harlem called Life After Dark Studio.
All right.
So we're working with young artists, develop artists. And my own music is I'm doing a lot of my heavy composition lifting there, as well as a lot of my production work, because we are fully, you know, fully functioning facility with all the instruments.
Okay. So when you're composing, do you go to both instruments to, when you're putting something together, do you sit down and just focus on the cello of composing, or do you focus on the trombone in your compositions of your works?
You know what? It goes both ways. I mean, sometimes I like to use an instrument as an inspiration, and it doesn't necessarily have to just be the cello or the trombone. It could be something real simple, like a little percussion instrument,
mm-hmm.
or just singing, clapping, playing a keyboard or a drum, whatever it might be, to grab inspiration. And that in itself is different than sometimes going into solitude and really just writing from where your head and where your heart come from.
Okay.
I like to do a mixture of both because, you know, otherwise you tend to get stuck at certain times, and it just helps free the creative juices and get things going again.
All right. So you're young, but are you, do you, would you rather like just be a composer or a musician and performing?
That's a tough one. I mean, I'm straddling the lines at this point. I mean, I'm getting a lot more recognition these days for composing, mm-hmm. and pulling down some interesting collaborations and commissions for composition.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I've made my mark living in New York now for 14 years as mostly a performer.
Okay,
and I think it has to be a mixture. I mean, you know, certain things are systematic. You know, you get older, you can't necessarily hit the road as hard as you can forever, unless you're a magic, you know, a magician like somebody like a Paquito de Rivera or a Sonny Rollins.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't know how they do it. I hope that I can do that. But not, you know, pretty much everyone else in the world cannot.
Right, so, exactly.
So that's why the system is in place. You know, I used to hate it because I would wonder why so many of my favorite artists wouldn't tour anymore.
Mm.
You know, and the older I get, the more
you discover why.
I figure out why.
Exactly. So your upcoming CD, which is, it gets released for next month or the end of this month, or
With Dream State, actually, we are releasing a couple singles right now. We've released the title track, and so that is available on all the digital retailers like mm-hmm. iTunes and Amazon and CD Baby, but the rest of the CD we're slated to do a release in the fall.
Okay, so is it a suite that composed as a suite? I guess
absolutely. Yep, it's a continuous work for an evening length concert, and I don't know how much you know about a group out of California named Bandaloop, but if for the listeners as well, those of you that have not heard of Bandaloop.org. You got to go there right now and see exactly what this group does. It's an aerial dance group inspired by nature and rock climbing. And so they actually harness up in rock climbing gear, and they hang from skyscrapers, bridges, mountains, famous man-made structures such as David Letterman's Late Show or Seattle's Space Needle.
Really?
And they dance in the sky.
Okay.
And I play with them. I composed music for them. I'm now their musical director, and I also play from the sky.
Okay.
So that has been, you know, that's been garnering quite a lot of attention. We've been having a couple very large outdoor shows where, during pre-production, people just, they see it. It's a spectacle. And by the time, you know, we're ready to launch the show, it's not uncommon to have 20 to 30,000 people, you know, standing in the street watching the shows.
Really? Okay.
So this music was commissioned actually by the Orange County Center for Performing Arts, which is a beautiful symphony hall near Los Angeles. And I actually decided to try something, to my knowledge, is very new, keeping a musical dream journal. So basically what I was doing is I would keep manuscript with me, and every time I would wake up, I would, you know, sort of meditate on the idea of finding melodies and harmonies and themes to work with, and I would wake up and then pen them and then take those to the studio and start orchestrating. So the piece actually that we heard right at the beginning of this segment is called Constellations. And to me, that was the first piece that was born out of the entire, you know, hour of music.
Okay.
To me, it represents the moment that you see heaven.
Mm. Got you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're of Asian descent, Japanese and Chinese. So, do you still have family in Japan? And if so, did you have a chance to visit them when you were young? And did that influence any of your musical, upbringing?
Absolutely. My mother is Japanese, and she grew up in Japan. Her family actually is mostly up north, quite close to the epicenter of the catastrophic tsunami and earthquakes. But thank heavens, knock on wood, they were all they all survived, and they've all been okay since then. But yeah, I grew up going to Japan, visiting, you know, almost every year just for family events and whatnot. And more recently, I've been back for a couple more, you know, work engagements and touring and doing things in the studio. And I love it there. It's incredible. It's like Tokyo, to me, is one of the most different places on the planet from anywhere else.
Okay.
Where else are you going to see a talking toilet or, you know, a 65-year-old troop of women ready, you know, ready each evening to vacuum the subway platforms? I mean, can you imagine them doing that?
You know, right? No. If you live in New York, you really can't imagine them doing that.
Down on Broadway in New York, or down on Michigan Ave in Chicago.
Right, right, right. That's totally, that would be like, that's a dream.
It is. It really is. So going to Japan, you know, has been a treat, but it's also been eye-opening in terms of seeing where my ancestors were. And more recently, I've done more studies about some of the traditional instruments like koto and how there's different modernizations of the instrument and how to write for that instrument.
Okay.
I think I've also been inspired by just, you know, words of wisdom coming from my relatives in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good to break bread with the relatives and see that they're proud and they're watching, you know, what I'm doing, and they want me to work hard and succeed, and that keeps me driven as well.
Okay. And speaking of modern instruments, it's a photograph of you with your cello, and it's a modernistic looking cello. It's not your usual. That is your cello, correct, in that photo? Promo photo I saw you. Did you design that?
I actually helped consult with the Yamaha Corporation. So while that was being updated into the newest model and the newest incarnation, I was there for a couple weeks in Japan, talking with the designers and giving my two cents about how that new, you know, how that new design should come through. And they did a great job, and that's when I decided to, you know, sign on and start working with them as an artist, performing artist and clinician. So Yamaha has been extremely helpful in supporting a lot of my appearances and anything that I do that has, you know, inherent educational value when I'm speaking to kids at universities and high schools all the way down to elementary school, about music, about technology that goes into, you know, making music, or technology that goes onto the stage, about, you know, sound in general. What are the physics of sound? How does science play a part into music? So we do a lot of that every year. We're reaching out and trying to tie that in to the community and bring, you know, new audiences to concert halls and to, you know, to venues that we're visiting.
Oh, excellent. So speaking of that, I want to get back into your CD and play something for my audience. So I was listening to it, and the one that I really intrigued me, that I really like, is it's called Mark F.T.
Oh, yeah.
John Shannon?
Featuring John Shannon, yes.
Right, okay. So that's one I like to play. And Dana, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it. And hopefully you'll get here to the Midwest soon.
I hope so. It'd be great to come back to Chicago. You know, I'm always in awe of, you know, the musicians that come out of there. There's something in the water, you know, that they just really, you know, fashion is nice there. And they could, you know, something. I keep telling all my friends about, you know, Chicago musicians can really write a damn good melody.
Okay.
You know, catchy. But I want to get back for sure.
Okay.
So thank you for having me on, and I hope everybody will stay in touch. You know, I'm on all the social networks, Dana Leong Music on Twitter and Dana Leong on Facebook, all that stuff. So I encourage everybody to reach out and let me know what you're thinking and let us know where you want us to go.
Okay. Well, hold on, please, while I start this. And this is Dana Leong.